digital LEDs pulse and flicker, finally resting on the number 24.
Previously on 24. That's how I've seen Pentathol.
You will experience a pain I can't even describe. At 8 cc's, I run the risk of inducing heart attack. 4 cc's!
And that's 8 cc's total, Jack. His vitals are spiking across the line.
4 cc's!
The connection you found between Dad and Gradenko had to do with a contract that was awarded to us.
What did an ex-Russian general have to do with the contract?
It was his job to release the old nukes into the U.S. for decommissioning.
He knows you didn't tell him everything.
And I won't. You know I won't, Dad.
I have to be sure.
I would like you to appear on television and appeal to members of Islamic communities everywhere to come forward with any information regarding Fayed. I certainly can't reach out to them for help, but I know you can.
Fayed has already called me a traitor. And many others will follow him if there is even a suspicion that I am an American puppet.
Not a puppet, a partner, at least when it comes to finding these nuclear weapons.
The president just rejected every one of my proposals.
The change in leadership is imperative to ensure this nation's security. I'm not talking about holding hearings. Something more immediate would have to happen.
This is the engineer.
You've got the wrong man.
You're going to modify this so that I can use it to reprogram the bombs. You will do it. The question is how much pain will be inflicted on you before you comply.
Stop! Oh, do it.
Arm it.
Very good.
Fayed's already gone.
The reprogramming device that Fayed had me built for him. If it's not here, it means he took it with him. And with it, he can activate the other bombs he has anytime he wants.
The following takes place between 2 p.m. and 3 p.m.
Fayed rides in a helicopter down into some kind of dry reservoir where is parked a van containing the other bombs. Fayed gets out of the helicopter and strides across towards the van. Several men are busy around the van and a nearby parked truck. Fayed makes a call on his mobile. In a flat, with an armed guard at the window, a grey-bearded man answers.
Yes.
I have the arming device.
But I had to leave one of the suitcases behind. What happened?
CTU found me. I needed to preoccupy them with a bomb to enable my escape.
Delivery system software was programmed for 5 detonations at 5 high-priority targets. Because of your carelessness, we are now down to 3.
More than enough for our needs, Gradenko. You just make sure the delivery system arrives on schedule.
The trucks have left Nevada, and they'll reach the location within 2 hours.
Good. You can use the time you have to reprogram your targeting software. Call me when it's completed.
Fayed snaps his phone shut and climbs smartly into the cab of the truck, which drives away after the van. At CTU.
Since the FAA was unable to track Fayed's chopper, we have to assume it's set down somewhere outside the containment area. We may not know where Fayed is, but we do know he's in possession of a device that will enable him to activate the 3 remaining suitcase nukes in his arsenal. Our only potential lead was uploaded from the hard drive of a laptop recovered at the scene by Jack Bauer and his team. Marlo.
There was an email fragment I was able to restore from the computer's hard drive.
It made reference to recent communications between Fayed and Dmitry Gradenko. Gradenko is the former Soviet general in charge of turning over Russian nukes to the U.S. for decommission. Ultimately, he was the source of the weapons Fayed now possesses.
So clearly, Gradenko is more involved in this than we realized. What's his interest in helping Fayed?
Gradenko is an ultra-nationalist. His desire to harm this country economically and otherwise is in sync with Fayed's.
Have we gotten any updated intel on his location?
Interpol just confirmed he's no longer in Moscow. Since the point of origin fingerprint on the email fragment was Pacific time, I think it's safe to assume he's somewhere on the West Coast, possibly Los Angeles. Chloe, run a data sweep through INS and Customs Channel, see if we can track how he got in the country.
Chloe goes to carry out Bill's instruction. At the doorway, she spots Morris, bloodied and bowed, being led into CTU by a knot of medics. 2:05. Chloe hesitates for a moment and then heads across.
Morris, we have to take him to medical.
I just want to talk to him for a minute. Are you okay?
Give us 10 minutes.
Chloe watches him go, conflicting emotions playing across her face. Her eyes then widen as she sees an armed TAC team marching in the middle of whom walks Jack. He stops briefly and looks around. Everyone in the place simply stops what they're doing and gawps at him.
Bill.
Jack.
Were you able to pull anything off the hard drive we found?
We have. Apparently Fayad's been in contact with Dmitry Gordenko.
Gordenko?
It's looking more and more like he's been aiding Fayad's operation all along.
You think he's here in Los Angeles?
The evidence on the hard drive points to that.
What leads do you have on Gordenko?
Your father's company was contracted to dispose of the nukes Gordenko was to hand over.
My brother Graham oversaw those contracts, not my father.
He still might have some information.
Okay, fine, I'll talk to him. Where is he?
He went to see your brother's body in the morgue.
Okay, thanks.
Jack crosses to Chloe.
Oh, are you all right?
Yeah. Thank you for saving Morris's life.
Yeah.
I'm really glad Fayette didn't kill you this morning.
Me too. I have to talk to my father. I just want to thank you for everything.
Jack touches Chloe's arm, smiles as best he can, and walks away. She remains looking deeply troubled, casting a worried look towards where Morris went. End of part one. Part two. Jack's father stands pensively amid the drab concrete and polished steel of the CTU mortuary. He holds a mobile phone in his hand and is erasing contact numbers. 2:07. He places the phone on a metal tray of what are presumably Graham's personal effects. He nudges at the wristwatch with his fingertip. He then picks up a small leather wallet from which he slides out a small photo. Unfolding it, he gazes at an image of himself and Graham in relaxed mood, sitting on a terrace holding martini glasses and smiling for the camera. Philip Bauer heaves a sigh. On the other side of the glass doors to the mortuary, Jack appears, still in his flak jacket. His father having his back to the doors, Jack is able to observe him for a moment as he collects himself before going in. Philip crosses to where Graham's body lies under a white sheet and tucks back the arm which has flopped out. Jack enters.
Dad.
Philip eyes Jack darkly.
Whatever your brother may have done, he didn't deserve this. I didn't mean for this to happen.
Yeah. Well.
Dad, I'm sorry about Graham. I am. But right now, CTU wants to know about your connection to Dmitry Gordenko.
What?
We believe that he's working with Fayad. They want to know what you know about him.
He was the Russian liaison on our government contract to decommission Soviet nukes. Why?
What kind of dealings did you have with him?
A couple of phone calls to Moscow, that's about it.
Do you know of any contacts that Gordenko might have which would allow Fayad to move the remaining 4 nukes?
Look, Jack, like I told you, I had virtually no involvement. Graham oversaw the project, he dealt with Gordenko. Whatever you need to know died with him.
Marilyn is.
No. Why? You gonna question her too?
Jack looks abashed and heads for the door.
She's probably with Josh. He's taking the death of his father pretty hard. Leave him alone, Jack. Let him grieve in peace. I'll make a call to some of the company executives. About Grudenko? Maybe Graham shared something that I wasn't privy to. Thank you.
As Jack leaves him alone once more, a sinister shadow passes across Philip's face. Chloe, outside the CTU medical facility, catches the eye of the doctor tending Morris. The doctor comes out to her.
Go in now.
Chloe, her face serious, heads in through the glass doors.
Morris? How are you feeling?
Morris raises his eyebrows ruefully but remains tight-lipped.
Say something.
What is there to say?
You were tortured. You held out as long as you could.
I armed a nuclear bomb.
You had to. Fayed was going to kill you.
I wish to God he had. Because of me, Fayed has devised that can arm all the bloody suitcase nukes he wants.
You can't blame yourself.
When the next bomb goes off and thousands of more people die, everybody will remember that I was the one that made it possible.
That's not going to happen. Because we're going to find Fayed and we're going to stop him and none of this will matter.
Are you any closer to finding him?
No.
She goes to kiss his forehead, but he ducks out of the way.
Just go, darling. Go.
Chloe goes, leaving Morris utterly abject, his head bowed towards his red and bruised shoulders. 2:11. Philip Bauer rounds a corner in CTU and rather furtively takes out his mobile. He opens it and, checking to see that he is not observed, makes a call.
Yes, Mr. Bauer.
We've got a problem. Grudenko's here.
In LA? Are you sure?
Yes. Only they don't know where he is. We've got to get to him before they do. If Grudenko implicates me, everything, the company I founded, spent my life protecting, it's over, you understand?
Yes. I'll put a team together.
I'll monitor CTU from here. If I hear of anything, I'll call you.
Yes, sir.
I don't care what you have to do. You find Grudenko. And you kill him.
Understood.
Philip Bauer walks back out from where he has been skulking. Jack appears outside the glass-walled meeting room in which stands Bill. Jack enters.
Talk to my father about Grudenko. He said he'd make some inquiries, but I think it's a dead end. He doesn't know anything.
The news from here isn't much better. But Milo managed to trace the fragment he pulled off Fayed's computer to a local IP network. It confirms Grudenko is definitely here in L.A. I've got my people monitoring chatter, data mining interagency backlogs on Grudenko's activities prior to going underground. Right now, that's all we can do.
Okay.
Have a seat, Jack.
Jack stops and gives Bill a sidelong glance.
What is it?
It's the toxicology report on your brother's body. Forensic evidence indicates that the hydrazine pentothal you administered to Graham during his interrogation caused his coronary. There's something else. I saw the field tape and Rick Burke's report for division. He said you exceeded protocols even after he warned you of dangerous levels.
That's true. Agent Burke tried to warn me.
Then you pulled a gun on him. You must realize how this looks, Jack. Coming right after your brother tried to kill you.
I lost control.
Because you found out he was responsible for David Palmer's assassination.
Yes, because I found out about David Palmer's assassination. Because I found out about everything. I lost control. I tried to tell you I didn't think I could do this. This job. I wanted to kill my brother. I wanted him dead. I was standing over him. And I looked up and I saw my father in the doorway. And everything just stopped. I ordered Agent Burke to shut down the IV. He did. I thought we got it in time.
Jack casts his eyes down in remorse. Bill continues looking intently at him from across the table.
Bill, I did not set out to kill my brother.
Bill's face softens slightly as if giving Jack credit on this. He turns and gazes out through the glass wall of the office.
I can adjust the report before I send it to division.
No.
Jack, an internal affairs investigation will impede our search for Fayette and Gradenko. Right now you are critical to that.
You cannot cover this up. I ordered Agent Burke to administer the hyoscine pentothal. I killed my brother. Whatever the consequences are, I accept them. Bill, do this right.
Bill nods in unwilling assent.
Okay. I'll submit the report as is.
Jack nods. 2:20. President Palmer and Al-Assad sit together drafting something on paper.
There is some difficulty with my statement.
A little more emphasis on religion and less on politics than I expected.
Many of the people you wish me to sway have been persuaded that our cause is a holy one. I am not innocent in this manipulation. So I must address them in these terms if I am to enlist their cooperation.
Yes.
Excuse me, sir. Vice President Daniels is calling for you. Would you like to take it in your office?
No, I'll take it in here. Thank you. Excuse me.
Assad looks on thoughtfully at Palmer as the president crosses to pick up a phone.
Noah, thank you for taking my call, Mr. President. I know you're pressed for time.
What can I do for you?
I'll get right to my point. I've made no secret of my disappointment that you rejected Tom Lennox's plan for mass internment of the Arab nationals in our country.
The plan did not delineate country of origin, Noah. It was nothing more than a blanket proposal to arrest and detain thousands of Muslims living here. Without due process, I might add.
Be that as it may, since as I understand it, the terrorists have now acquired the capability to arm the three remaining nuclear weapons, I'm asking you to reconsider.
And I thought I told you that my decision was not open for debate.
Well, that's unfortunate, Mr. President, since the majority of your cabinet feels that you're making a tragic mistake.
I respect that. But I firmly believe that our best chance of stopping further attacks will come from the intelligence drawn from Islamic communities.
And you hope to obtain that by letting a known terrorist leader address the world on American airwaves. The man has murdered countless innocents over the past 20 years, and you are putting your hopes for this country's safety on him.
Not entirely. But to the extent that he can help us, yes.
Mr. President, you approached me to be your running mate because you knew I could deliver voters who questioned your experience, who were afraid that your presidency would be too weak on national defense, and I assured them otherwise, but now you're proving them right.
There's a thin line between
conviction and stubbornness. You can stand firm, but just know that
you're standing alone.
Are we done?
Clearly.
The craggy-faced vice president's eyes narrow. Assad looks levelly across at Palmer.
You are paying a very high price for doing this.
And a size my country will pay if I'm wrong.
As someone who has alienated followers, by choosing the unpopular course, I suggest you tread carefully among your people.
Mr. Assad, our cultures are very different, sir.
It's not just a cultural issue, Mr. President. It's simple human nature. They will come after you. I assure you of that.
Palmer considers this advice seriously. Tom Lennox prowls circumspectly through the corridors of the presidential bunker, looking this way and that with the air of a plotter in a Jacobean tragedy. He looks at his wristwatch. He comes to a door on which is stenciled Danger, High Voltage. Casting a look over his shoulder, he enters the stark room. The clean-cut Reed emerges from the shadows, seeming now more assured than before.
Be sure it's safe to talk in here.
Yes, this area is currently unmonitored.
All right. You intimated you had some sort of plan of dealing with the president.
Palmer's refusal to implement your proposals will unquestionably lead to the loss of many more American lives. And I, and many others like me, who love this country, will not stand by idly and let that happen.
So what is it you propose?
I think you know.
I need to hear.
Definitive action. We are in the middle of a national crisis, and he is in over his head. He's brought this on himself.
Lennox's face becomes strained, and he turns away from Reed and paces.
Listen, before you start reconsidering and report me, just know I will deny that we ever had this conversation.
No. I'm not reconsidering. I know what you're saying is necessary. I just cannot believe it has come to this. Who else is involved?
You don't need to know that.
I'd like to know who I'm dealing with.
Right now, you're dealing with me.
Vice President Daniels, is he involved?
No. The Vice President doesn't know anything about this. But we do know that he shares our sentiment in regard to the current state of affairs, and that he will enact your initiatives once he has the power to do so.
You seem pretty certain this is going to work.
More so with your help. I need the president's itinerary, specifically in regards to Assad's televised address. I do not have the proper clearance. I need you to access it.
Why? Why do you need this? Damn it, Reed. We're talking about removing the President of the United States. Do not keep me in the dark here.
I never said that I was the architect of this. I'm just a conduit. Besides, for your sake, I think that it is very important that we maintain a certain level of plausible deniability. The less you know, the better.
Lennox seems almost unable to believe what is happening, while Reed is tense to breaking point.
I'll get you that itinerary.
Lennox exits. Reed's face registers a scintilla of relief amid the overwhelming tension. 2:27, end of part two. Part three. Jack hurries through a set of doors.
Marilyn.
Hi.
I heard you were with Josh. I didn't want to disturb you.
Well, he's taking it pretty hard. He loved his father very much.
I'm very sorry.
You don't owe me an apology.
Maybe they haven't told you of the circumstances of Graham's heart attack.
They told me enough. Look, Jack, I know the kind of man Graham was. Even if he did die because of your interrogation, I don't blame you. I blame him. Truth is, I've been trying to leave Graham for years. But he threatened to take Josh away from me. He said I'd never see him again.
Did Josh know what he was like?
No. I always tried to protect him from the truth about his father.
What have you told him about his father's death?
Only that he had a heart attack. That's enough for now.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I have to go back to work. If there's anything I can do.
Is it true there are more bombs out there?
Yes.
Are you any closer to finding them?
No, we've hit a roadblock. Right now we're looking for a Russian operative who we believe is helping the terrorists. Graham knew him.
Russian?
A man named Grudenko. You know him?
No.
Jack eyes her shrewdly as uncertainty flickers across her face. He takes her to one side.
Come here.
2:33. Philip Bauer appears around a corner in time to observe Jack leading Marilyn away through a doorway into a secluded side room.
But you know something.
Maybe. It
It's probably nothing. It was months ago.
Marilyn, anything you could tell us might help.
Graham was going out a lot at night, and he said it was work-related, but I didn't believe him. I thought he was having an affair on me, so one night I followed him. It wasn't out of jealousy. It was for leverage, anything I could use against him to get custody of Josh if I left him.
Where did he go?
It was to a house in West LA. I went to the window, the blinds were drawn, but I could hear him inside talking to some men. They had Russian accents.
What were they saying?
I couldn't hear him clearly enough, and frankly, once I realized he wasn't cheating on me, I got in the car and went home.
Do you remember the address of the house?
No. Jack, I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention. I was more concerned about getting caught.
Marilyn, it is vital that we find this man, Gridenko. If we retrace the route that you took that night, do you think that you would recognize the house?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
We're right here.
Having spotted Bill going up towards his office, Jack goes out, leaving Marilyn alone in the side room. 2:35. Philip Bauer looks on coolly and then disappears back into the shadows. Bill, standing at his desk, looks up as Jack enters.
Sure.
I think I might have a lead on Gridenko. It's a real shot in the dark, but right now we don't have anything. I wanted to know if I had your permission to follow it up.
What do you got?
Philip Bauer slides alongside Marilyn.
Hey, Marilyn.
Hey, Philip.
How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there.
What's going on with you and Jack?
He's looking for someone. He thinks I can help.
You mean Gridenko? He questioned me about the same thing earlier. What do you know about him?
Nothing, really. I followed Graham to a house one night. He met with some Russians.
What house?
I don't know. It was in West LA. Jack wants to take me over there to see if it can jog my memory. Philip, I don't know how long this is going to take, and I can't leave Josh alone. Could you please stay with him?
Yeah, sure.
That'll do. Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Your tech team's assembling outside. I'm sending Milo along with you.
Milo, why?
I want a tech available to pull intel off any computers we might find at Gridenko's location. Chloe will be running point from here.
Okay, fine.
I'm sorry about leaving you, sweetheart. But I'll be back as soon as I'm done helping Uncle Jack.
Helping him with what? And where are you going?
I'll explain later. Right now, I want you to stay here with your grandfather, all right?
Marilyn. I was thinking maybe I would take Josh back to my house.
Why? Why can't you just wait with him here until I get back?
Marilyn, look, he's frightened of this place, understandably so. I think he needs to be in familiar surroundings right now.
Marilyn deliberates, looking over at Josh.
All right, I'll clear it with Mr. Buchanan. Will you explain things to Josh?
Yeah, sure.
Philip permits himself the most fleeting of smiles.
Listen to your grandfather. He's in charge. Philip, thank you.
Philip's smile widens as she leaves to join Jack.
Sorry to take you away from Josh. All you need to do is identify the house. I promise you I will not put you in any danger.
I know. Mr. Buchanan, I'd like it if Josh's grandfather could take him back to his house.
Of course. We should go. Bill will be on comm.
We'll be leaving soon, Josh. I have to make one phone call. Just be a minute.
Josh remains seated and watches his grandfather through the glass wall as he leaves to make his call.
Yes, sir.
Have your men find and secure a house in West LA.
Fine. I'll text you with the address.
2:43. Chloe marches purposefully back into the medical facility.
Morris, we have a lead. Jack's sister-in-law thinks she knows where Grudenko is. Jack and a TAC team are heading over there now. I need your help running tactical.
That'd be ridiculous.
We're short-handed, so get your shirt on and let's go.
Running tactical is what you do best. Why would you need my help? Oh, I get it. You came in here to give me a pep talk. Get me back working behind that computer and everything will be tickety-boo. Should be a little less obvious, Chloe. I'm a coward, not an idiot.
Morris, I know you've been through a lot today, but you're really starting to piss me off.
Well, let's add that to my list of failings. Why did you do that?
I didn't want to.
Look, if you're going to try and save a bloke, save someone who's worth it. Oh, stop it.
Jack and his team are entering a hostile situation and they need CTU backup. Yes, I can do it alone. But there'd be less chance of a mistake if you would help. So why don't you stop feeling sorry for yourself and get back to work?
Morris sits absorbing this unpalatable slice of home truth. 2:44, Jack drives Marilyn through the streets of L.A.
Milo, we just passed 98th Street.
Roger that, Jack. We're maintaining our position 6 blocks behind you.
Marilyn casts Jack a sympathetic glance.
I can't imagine what you went through in China, Jack.
He flexes the melted skin on the backs of his hands.
When you were over there, I thought about you. I tried not to. I guess I've been trying not to think about you for over 20 years.
Really, we don't need to talk about this.
It's your father, wasn't it? He drove you away. Tried to pressure you to work for his company. Is that why you left and enlisted in the military?
There were a lot of reasons.
Was I one of them?
No.
She looks away. She reaches into her bag, pulls out a small mobile phone and answers the call.
Hello?
Marilyn, it's me. Don't say anything. Just listen. I don't want Jack to know I'm on the line, you understand?
Okay.
You're involved in something that's much bigger than you can possibly imagine. So here's the deal. Unless you do exactly what I say, I will hurt Josh. If you don't believe that, you might want to consider this. Graham's death was not an accident. I killed him. I want you to say thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Susan.
Now, you're not going to take Jack to the house where Graham met the Russians. You're going to take him to a different address. 9407 Hendry Place. You got it?
Yeah.
Good. Now, you do this for me, and I promise you, you will see Josh again. If you don't, he dies.
9407 Hendry Place. Do the right thing, Marilyn.
I already lost a son today. Don't make me lose a grandson.
Goodbye, Susan.
You all right?
Fine.
Thank you. It's my office. A lot of the roads are still shut because of the bomb.
Can we get home?
No. And no one seems to know when they'll open up again.
Then what do?
We go to a hotel. We can stay there until they clear up.
Philip drives Josh away in a sleek black Lexus. 2:47. Jack's car continues through the LA streets. Marilyn casts a sidelong look out of her window as they pass the Venetian-blinded windows of an apartment in which stands an armed guard. Grudenko moves into another of the rooms, looking at his watch.
Marilyn, is any of this familiar?
Yes. Jack.
What? What is that?
It's nothing. I thought I saw the house, but I was wrong.
As the car glides onwards, she spots a blue street sign at a corner.
Oh, that was it. Hendry Place.
Well, we got a street. Hendry Place.
Copy that, Jack. Relaying it to CGU now.
Marilyn's face registers agonizing conflict. In Grudenko's apartment.
How long before the new targets are reprogrammed?
20 minutes.
You still think you can trust the Arabs?
They serve their purpose. Our country lost the Cold War because it was afraid to use these weapons against the Americans.
Grudenko pats a deadly-looking firearm on the table.
Today we will correct that mistake. And the Arabs will take all the blame.
.249, end of part 3. .253, at CTU.
All right, we're on it. Chloe, Marilyn remembers the street where she believes her husband met with Grudenko. Hendry Place.
It's a mile away from where they're looking. Is she sure?
That's what she told Jack. Pull up all access roads in and out of the area.
I'm in the middle of reconfiguring the uplink.
Bill looks up. Chloe follows his gaze and sees Morris walking back onto the operations floor.
I'll put Morris on it.
You call.
Chloe shoots a look across to where Morris is setting himself up at his own workstation. She grimaces slightly. He catches her eye. His expression remains non-committal. Philip Bauer walks along a hotel corridor with Josh at his side.
I know you're lying to me. Just like my mom. You're all treating me like I'm just some stupid little kid.
What are you talking about?
I want to know why my dad died.
What's your mother told you? It was a heart attack.
I know, but I know he was doing something illegal or whatever. But nobody's telling me what it was, and I just want to know. Did it have to do with the nuke?
Look, Josh. You're going to hear a lot of things about your father, what he may or may not have done. And I'm not going to pretend it's going to be easy for you. You know, no matter what, I'm going to be there for you.
Josh ponders this as his grandfather goes to unlock the hotel room door. 2:55. In Jack's car, Marilyn nervously scans the passing buildings.
That's it. The pale blue house on the right.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
We've got an address, 9407 Hendry Place. Initiate tactical response with CTU. Have them bring up the schematics of the house. Meet me in the alley behind the target.
All right, I'm on it.
Hold on.
Marilyn clutches the grab handle above the car door as Jack swings the vehicle into a back alley between two rows of buildings. A large black van pulls in behind them and the two vehicles bounce along on the poorly made road. They then pull in on the right. Jack gets out and crosses to a uniformed member of the TAC team.
We're going after the blue house. Advise your men. Non-lethal force. We need Grudenko alive.
Jack.
Marilyn, I want you to stay in the tactical van. You'll be safe there.
But I have...
Jack. Okay, I got the schematics. There are 2 entrances, one in the front, one on the west side of the house.
Okay, I'll contact CTU as soon as we've got Grudenko in custody. Milo, I want you to stay with Marilyn. Your men ready?
What's that?
Let's go.
Jack and his team of 5 or 6 men open the wire mesh gate at the rear of the property and head across the lawn. Marilyn clutches the mesh and peers anxiously after Jack. Milo stays close to her. 2:57. Jack rounds the corner of the house. He beckons the others forward and tucks in close to the wall. They reach the rear door. One soldier covers another who steps up to the door with a miniature battering ram.
Let's go. Go!
Go! Go!
Jack moves cautiously into the deserted house. He spots a device hidden behind some boxes.
Fire! Everyone out!
Jack leaps through the window.
Gotta go.
No!
Get in the van! Get in the van and close the door!
As Milo reverses up at speed, men jump into a dark SUV and drive off.
Jack, can you hear me?
Milo reverses through another high fence. The SUV is in hot pursuit. Milo powers across a back garden, taking a child's plastic playhouse with him through another dividing fence. The cumbersome van bursts through and onto the road. The SUV is close behind. Milo throws the van around a corner and slews along a street. In the SUV, a man aims a powerful sidearm. Milo swerves the stricken van through 90 degrees and smashes into a brick wall. Marilyn takes cover behind the van as Milo leaps back into the rear and primes a drawer full of grenades.
Move! Come on, come on, move! Go, 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 go! Don't stop!
The assassins are blown off their feet by the exploding van, but they soon set off in pursuit again. The armed men run through the gateway down which Milo and Marilyn have run. Josh sits pensively in his hotel room. Philip is on the phone. Tom Lennox waits eagerly for a document to print. Jack lies on the ground by the charred shell of the booby-trapped house.
All agents report in. All agents report in now.
Jack spots Milo's burning van.
Calling in for EMT.
3 p.m. The end.
As ever, there's more on 24 at sky1.co.uk. Next, this Choco Sunday night, we're island bound. Could tonight's loss be more astonishing than last week's? Probably. And the 79th Academy Awards are upon us. Fern Cotton has a prime spot on the red carpet. Sky 1's live from Hollywood at 11. And it's in HD too.